NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Adrian Ma.
And I'm Paddy Hirsch. The sanctions imposed by nations in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine haven't just been aimed at Russia's economy. They've also been aimed at the personal economies of Russian individuals, the so-called oligarchs.
You may have been hearing about these oligarchs for a couple of weeks now. They're wealthy men, and yes, they are all men, and they've had their overseas assets frozen and their freedom of movement curtailed. Many of the trappings of wealth they're used to have been sort of blocked off to them in a handful of nations around the world, in parts of Europe, the UK, and the US. Here's President Biden in a State of the Union speech.
We're joining with European allies to find and seize their yachts, their luxury apartments, their private jets. We're coming for you, ill-begotten gains.
Seizing an asset means taking it away altogether, but that's something only a court can allow. Until, or if that happens, the asset will be frozen. That means the oligarch still owns his boat, his flat, his private jet. He can even use them if he can get to them. He just can't sell them. He can't turn them into money, just as he can't access the money in his frozen bank account.
The idea is to put pressure on these men by restricting their movements and cutting off their access to cash. The hope is that they will in turn put pressure on Russian President Vladimir Putin. So, who are these people exactly? How did they become so wealthy? And is sanctioning them likely to do anything to sway their leader? That's coming up after the break.
Over the last 20 years, the word oligarch has pretty much been used exclusively in connection with wealthy Russian businessmen. Stanislav Marcus is an associate professor of international business at the University of South Carolina and a specialist on Russian oligarchs.
So originally, the word oligarchia comes from Aristotle, which means the rule of the few, right? So it's simply the idea that the power is not widely dispersed, like in a democracy, neither is it vested in a single person like in a totalitarian system, but a few people basically share the power among themselves.
Now, the definition of oligarchy has expanded since Aristotle's day. Marcus says that means that an oligarch today isn't just someone who has a lot of power, but also enormous wealth. In Russia, that means people with super yachts and private planes and fancy real estate, sports franchises, and all the luxuries that money can buy. In many cases, that means luxuries in countries outside Russia.
It's hard to say how many oligarchs there are in Russia. Some of them live large, right? They travel widely and they're often seen in the media. Others are a lot more discreet. In 2018, the US Treasury released a list of 96 men that it called oligarchs, classifying them as men with assets of $1 billion or more.
Marcus says these oligarchs fall into three loose categories. First, there are the original, the OG oligarchs. They became wealthy when the Soviet Union fell apart in the 1990s.
The Soviet Union was, of course, a state-dominated planned economy. Everything belonged to the state, right? All factories, shops, everything. And then after the Soviet Union collapsed and Russia tried to build a market economy, they had to privatize all those state assets. They had to give them to private owners.
They didn't quite give them these assets. The oligarchs had to buy them. But they bought them very cheap and they became super rich.
After coming to power in 2000, Vladimir Putin set about creating a new generation of oligarchs, some of whom were pretty close friends of his from St. Petersburg.
He basically gave super lucrative state contracts to his buddies, so to say, and they grew ultra wealthy in exchange for kickbacks. They would return, you know, some of this money into basically a slush fund. That's what makes Vladimir Putin one of the wealthiest people on the planet. Nobody knows exactly how wealthy, but that's one of the key processes.
Because they've been so rich for so long, many of these two categories of oligarchs are highly visible. They're men like Roman Abramovich, who became rich when he bought an oil company under the presidency of Boris Yeltsin in 1995. Today, he's worth an estimated $6.9 billion and has assets all over the world, including in Israel and the UK, where he owns Chelsea Football Club, of all things.
I mean, if you've got that much money, like, why not buy a football team, right?
Yeah, but don't buy Chelsea, for heaven's sake.
Oh, okay, no... I don't know anything about European football, so no comment. Anyway, soccer team owning billionaires like Abramovich, they have pools and pools of money, but they don't have much influence. Part of the deal with Putin is that they can get as rich as they want, but they gotta stay out of politics. And so, most of them aren't in Putin's inner circle. They don't have his ear. And yet, because they are visible, these are the oligarchs who've been sanctioned. Marcus says that probably won't achieve a whole lot.
So I don't think that the outsider oligarchs, just because they're losing their money, they will, you know, they can have a conversation with Putin and say, hey, Vladimir, what are you doing? That's a very dangerous conversation for them to have, right? Because he's not incentivized to listen. He is, however, incentivized to listen to the military elites.
The military elites, which include the most recent generation of oligarchs, the so-called silovarks.
It's basically a portmanteau of two words, siloviki and oligarchs. Siloviki is the reference to the Russian military and quasi-military elites. So Interior Ministry, Ministry of Defense, and of course the Secret Services, right? So we call them siloviki, then oligarchs. You combine these two words, you get silovarks.
These silovarks, these are the people who used to occupy positions in the military and the security services. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, they lost all their power. And that was bad for the silovarks, obviously. But watching a bunch of brash young businessmen become billionaires, you know, the OG oligarchs, that was even worse.
So they harbored that resentment for a decade. And then Putin comes to power and basically says, okay, now you can have a piece of that. And he facilitates the accumulation of wealth by these people from the military agencies.
Today, these silovarks are the mainstay of Putin's inner circle. They may not be in the army or the FSB, which used to be the KGB anymore, but they remain closely linked and highly influential in those organizations.
These are the men Putin will increasingly rely on in the coming weeks to keep the Russian people in line. And assuming the war in Ukraine grinds on and sanctions continue to pummel the Russian economy, Marcus says these silovarks should be a priority target.
If Putin loses coercion, you know, he loses power. So we could see from this, you know, specifically from the group of silovarks, we could see pressure. We could even see internal attempts at a coup. So that's not out of the question. We could see a group of these people coming together and saying, look, we're losing too much.
But Marcus says identifying and targeting these men is not easy. While they likely do have vast assets outside Russia, they're a lot less obvious about it than the kind of oligarchs who go off buying questionable British football teams.
Ownership is highly concealed. It's layered in different offshores. Ultimately, this is about disclosing who is the ultimate owner of these, you know, weird structures in the Caymans and Cyprus, wherever, right? And that will require much more investigative work.
To really be effective, these sanctions have to be a lot more targeted and a lot more specific than this wide net that the U.S. and its allies have cast. They need to provide the silovarks with real incentives to either turn on their boss or convince him to back down.
And that's hard, especially when you consider that the word siloviki is literally translated as men of force or hard men. And the silovarks are generally committed to the idea of Russia as a great power. They also come from the same background as Putin, which means they're acutely aware of what he's capable of.
Putin has demonstrated that he can certainly expropriate things at home in Russia, and he can target and assassinate his enemies abroad.
Still, as the Russian economy implodes, all of the country's oligarchs are looking more vulnerable. When the West has sanctioned oligarchs in the past, Putin has mollified them and bought them off by promising them state contracts down the line. But those kinds of incentives look a lot less attractive today. If the US and its allies can keep the pressure on the economy, sanctions on individuals could be a powerful tool, as long as they're directed at those oligarchs with a triple threat: money to lose, power to wield, and access to Putin's ear.
This episode was produced by Sam Yellowhorse Kessler with help from Isaac Rodriguez. It was fact-checked by Corey Bridges. Viet Le is our senior producer. Kate Concannon edits the show, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.